All right, so today is May 18th, 4 o'clock, Guam Cancer Trust Fund monthly meeting. And I am recording and everybody's aware. And just to mention all of the members present, I'm Rachel Leon Guerrero and I'm the chair, and we have in attendance, we have Chris Felix, Dr. Awadi, and Ken Leon Guerrero and Yvette Paulino. And then we also have Guam Cancer Trust Fund Program Manager, Remlin Yamanaka. And we have our admin assistant here, also Joanne Paulino. And it looks like that's it. We don't have anybody from the community. So, wow, that's a first. Okay, so anyways, I'm gonna call this meeting to order at 4:02 p.m. And I'm going to share the agenda. Let me just share screen here. Sorry. How come I can't do this? Okay. All right. There we go. Okay. Can everybody see that? Okay, and Ram, just interrupt me if you see anybody that's in the waiting room so I can let them in. Okay, so I'm gonna call this meeting to order at 4:02, and thank you everybody for joining, and I really appreciate your flexibility in moving the time of the meeting so that everybody could have a chance to attend. And everybody got the minutes of April 22nd. Did everybody get a chance to review the minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. How about Chris, Dr. Awadi, Yvette, did you all get a chance?
Yes.
Okay. Does anybody have any corrections to the minutes?
First of all, I think the minutes are have been expanded over the years, so it's great to see the amount of details that have been included in the minutes. For the last minutes, I think that was the April 22nd, I don't see the discussion that we had when I had inquired about the definition of GMHA being a possible charitable organization. This is where the legal counsel came in and was describing that and also suggested two options for us. I didn't see that anywhere in the minutes unless I missed it.
I think, I thought that was something that he, well, shoot, I thought that that was something he gave as options in an email.
No, he actually talked about it in our meeting.
Okay. Let me see. Let me look at my notes really quick that I took of that. Okay. Because I have my notes.
I recall him discussing it, then they had to run for a regents meeting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so what we can do is Rem, can you go back and just check the transcript and see if that's in there? And then, so we will table the approval of the minutes so that we can.
There was one more I think I had, is just to maintain consistency on the motions. So I know in some places it specifically said what the motion was. And then in other places, I think that was under the new business where it just said the motion passed, but it didn't specify what the motion was.
Okay.
And I think this one is the one related to revising the rules and regs. The part where we said that we decided to not change any of the eligibility and wait until it's approved Yeah, so we can specify what the motion was because it just says the motion. Let's see. There, to new business under item A. Two. It just said that we decided to just leave the eligibility and then it has the first motion and the second motion. But if we could specify like what the motion was, because I was trying to remember exactly what the motion was, but I didn't see it there.
Okay, we will, let me see. So let's.
I just thought that we were, I don't recall deciding that we were just going to leave it until it passes, but I could be wrong. So we could specify in what the motion was there, then I think that would be very helpful for everyone.
Okay, so then let's correct that and then Rem, and then we'll table the approval of these minutes until next time, just so that we can make sure we get everything in there that's missing. Yeah.
Thank you, Rem.
You're welcome.
Okay, so we'll table that. And okay, my report. First thing I'd like to do is welcome our new member, new council member, Mr. Christopher Felix. He was appointed by President Kreis. And as you know, that we had to get a new member because at our last meeting, as you see in the minutes, Mr. Skrull resigned early on during the discussion. So anyways, we're very, very grateful that Mr. Felix has agreed to serve as a council member. So I just wanted to give him the opportunity to just quickly introduce himself and just tell us a little bit about himself.
Sorry, couldn't find the unmute button. I'm Christopher Felix. I have a real estate company here in Guam, Century 21 Realty Management. I've been on Guam for 50 years, been involved in a lot of charity and organizations. My most recent was I was a regent for the University of Guam for 6 years and got out a couple years ago. That's about it.
Well, we welcome you and we're happy that you're part of our team. And please feel free if you have any questions. I know a lot of people don't know a lot of the inner workings of the Guam Cancer Trust Fund. So Remelin and I actually developed a kind of a fact sheet for the president, because yesterday we had our budget hearing for the University of Guam. So came up with a fact sheet, you know, a cheat sheet in case he got asked questions. And so we'll share that with everybody just to let you know what's happening. And even for me, it's like, oh yeah, it helps me to just remember some of the basics. But thank you very much. And we just happy to have you on board. So moving on to the next part of my report, financial report this should be as of April, because I updated it, April 30th. The financial report that's reported by the UOG business office, total amount of cash in the account is $2,613,720.60. But of that, most of it's allocated towards the different awardees, $2,243,510.71. So that's already allocated, you know, to Guam Cancer Care, EM Calvo, Catholic Social Services, Azuda, and American Cancer Society. So what is unallocated is $370,209.89. And this is the amount that we will be carrying that forward to use in next fiscal year. And as you may know, in the governor's budget proposal for FY 2022 that she released back in January, she only allocated $1 million for the Guam Cancer Trust Fund. And, you know, that's not going to be, that's not a lot. And for FY 2022, just because of all the applications that we've been getting, our normal awardees that apply, we anticipate getting seven applications or applications from seven nonprofits, our usual folks. And if they request anything similar to what they usually request, then the total ask would be $2.4 million, and that's nowhere near what we will have available. So anyways, that's something to keep in mind. And I was going to suggest something in the new business. And then the last part of my report is that we had our UOG legislative budget hearing yesterday. And usually during these UOG budget hearings, one of the last things that we are asked is an update on the Guam Cancer Trust Fund. And I was there, but they didn't ask questions, which I guess is a good thing because that means that they're not too worried. But it was bad for UOG because they asked us a whole bunch of questions about why are we raising tuition. So anyways, so that's my report. And before I go on, I just wanted to give anybody a chance to ask questions or make any comments about anything I brought up. Okay. If no questions, then I will move on to, there's Anthony Camacho. I will move on to the report from the Guam Cancer Trust Fund Program Manager from Remlin Yamanaka.
Hi everybody, welcome Mr. Felix. You're gonna be getting a lot of emails from me. Well, anyways, my report will be short. Basically right now I'm just receiving invoices from the FY 2021 application. So that's two so far. That's just Edward M. Calvo and American Cancer Society. So we're getting them slowly. But then for FY 2020, I'm still receiving invoices because they have a no-cost extension that was approved. Is Guam Cancer Care for Direct Services and Education Outreach and Azuda Foundation. Azuda Foundation, Mr. Spadon just dropped invoices, I think a few days ago, and right now we're processing payment for that. So his own, he's actually really using the money since I guess the restriction for flying is a little bit at ease. So a lot of the patients are flying out of Guam recently. So right now, Mr. Spadon is actually, he has a lot of invoices for us to process payments. And other than that, I'm working up on our website. And for the past few months, we had contracted a graphic artist to design a logo for the Guam Cancer Trust Fund because we never had one for so many years. So if you look at the agenda that's on the top, we finally have our own trademark Guam Cancer Trust Fund logo, which symbolizes the cancer ribbon. But if you can see, the outline looks like a lattice stone. And inside the ribbon, it has the Guam, instead of the seal, we just put, it's inside the lattice stone, but it's the same picture you would see at the Guam seal. So that's gonna be our new logo for the Guam Cancer Trust Fund. Anybody have questions for me?
A question just for the logo.
Sure.
Is there a reason why that color was selected? Would you consider another color that doesn't just single out like cervical cancer?
Oh, I guess because we were trying to stay with the same color with the Guam Cancer Registry here at the university, because I noticed we're all the different they have the same color. So the last time I checked, the one that was on our website was purple. So I know purple symbolizes another color. So I just wanted to stay in the same area with the Guam Cancer Registry. But if you want, we can change the color.
I was just curious. I don't necessarily want to single out a word of any particular cancer burden.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was just curious about how that was selected.
Okay.
Yeah, Yvette, you're right, because it's light lavender that represents all cancers as a whole. So I think we were dark purple before, so we can, I'm open to that. That's fine if that would be. Yeah, whatever the group wants, that's fine.
We don't have to stay on this topic. It was just one of those, when I look at the colors, I tend to associate it with a particular cancer burden. And so I can only imagine others in the community thinking that you only
support. But we only stick to one. Okay. Yes, I understand. I just wanted to go with the same with what we have here at the university, since WOM Cancer Trust Fund is within the university. So I said, just make it together, because last time people saw the purple, and yes, the color purple did emphasize another type of cancer.
Lung cancer, right?
So I'm like, oh man, so I don't know. But yes, so I just kind of like wanted to be in the safe side and be in the middle.
We can send that out. That's something that we can decide via email. Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good. Okay. All right. Let's see. Make sure I. Okay. Oh wait. There's something in the chat here. Okay. All right. Next is old business. So, I really apologize. It's been a crazy month, and I wanted to get more options on the new provision for code of conduct. So, just as a review, if you remember, we proposed last meeting to add a section to the revised rules and regs, just to put a code of conduct for council members. And I had copied this language pretty much from the UOG Board of Regents code of conduct, because it was, I thought it was simple and just kind of got to the point. And we could go into lengthy, several different, bullet points. But in my opinion, the rules and regs are already so long. And I felt like the more specific and the more, the longer you make it, the more complicated it gets. And so I was just proposing, if everybody was agreeable, that maybe we can just keep it simple. And I'll just read it out for the record. My suggested language for adding this bullet point is, Guam Cancer Trust Fund council members are expected to serve as models of public conduct through our personal demeanor, public respect for civilized dialogue, whether via verbal or written communications, strict avoidance of conflict of interest, and commitment to the GCTF self-regulation and periodic self-assessment. And then if you notice where I had in the revised rules and regs that Remlin had sent out, this bullet was placed right before an existing bullet where it says that the president, and this is already existing that has been in the rules and regs, the original, is that the president can remove members for cause. So, this kind of just makes a definition of, well, these would be the things if somebody violated the code of conduct, then it would be the president who could remove. So I put this out there and for discussion, if anybody else has any opinions or questions to let me know, let us all know what you think.
I think it's a good thing just to include just as a guideline, because the president's power to remove is absolute for cause. And I don't think we need to get into any more specific than this, because the more you specify, then the more you leave open things that aren't listed. So I like the fact that this is very general in nature and very concise at the same time. So I'm fine with this language right here. I see this type of language in a lot of bylaws in corporations as to removing board members. So it's not an unusual clause. So that's my support.
Okay, thanks, Ken.
Rachel, is this something that we need to vote on? Do you need a motion for this or?
Yeah, we voted last time to include a clause in the to hold off submitting the revised rules and regs to the legislature until we include a clause, but we didn't decide what we wanted that sentence to be, that bullet point. So I think we would need a motion, and I think, let me see. I believe that Rumlin sent it out. Let me see, where is it? I'm gonna stop sharing this, and I'll share this one. So what the proposal is for is D, which is the same language that is in the agenda, to put it right there before the removal for cause, the highlighted section. And so that's what I'm proposing, and we can tweak it if just like we did last year when we were working on this, we can tweak this. Oops, sorry. But yeah, we would need a motion to include this new code of conduct clause into the revised rules and regs.
Well, then I would move that we include the language as presented into the new rules and regs.
Okay, second. Anybody to second?
I would second that.
Okay, thank you. And so is there any discussion? Okay, if no discussion, then all in favor of adding this clause as is, as presented, say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. Thumbs up. Okay, awesome. Motion is passed. Thank you very much. Okay, so we'll add that to the rules and regs, and we will finally send this out to the legislature. Okay, so we're done with the old business, new business. This is just going to be really short. I was going to propose, and I'm proposing that we send a request to the members of the 36th Guam Legislature who are members of the Committee on Health, Land, Justice, and Culture to consider increasing our funding for FY 2022. And I had, let me stop share. So last August, I had sent out a memo to all the members of the legislature on behalf of the council requesting that they consider giving us more funding. Of course, that was ignored, but I'm gonna try again. And so these are the members. So we're just gonna, if it's agreeable, then we'll draft something. And based on what I drafted last year with some more updated information, and I'd like to send it out. Chris, would you like to say something?
Yeah, if you're gonna send it out, I just wanted to say, could you put all of our names on it? A lot of us know these senators very personally, and by putting our names, it kind of puts a little backing to it. Just a thought.
Yes, actually what I wanted to do was send out a draft, a memo to you all and have you all, you know, tweak it, add your edits. And then once it's done, we'll send it electronically to everybody and get your signatures. So it, you know, has our signature also, so that it you know, they really see that we're all behind it and we've signed our names to it. Because, you know, we really got to get more money. We have to try, even if they say no, we still have to try. So yeah, we'll definitely do that. So, okay, great. So we'll try to get something out within the next week. I leave on Friday. But I'll try to send something out, you know, via email that we can start working on. The other thing I was going to do is, we did this last year, but nobody responded. I contacted all the awardees, you know, Guam Cancer Care, American Cancer Society, all of them, and asked them if they would be willing also to send letters to the members of the legislature to request support. And none of them did. So, you know, I think somebody talked to American Cancer Society and they said, you know, we can't really do that because it's kind of a conflict. So, some organizations will not do it, but, you know, in the past, Guam Cancer Care was like super gung ho and did it, almost to the point of, you know, causing scandal and all that stuff. So, you know, we'll ask, and if they're interested, we can send out a letter, template letter to help them. I know that James Espeldon from Azuda, he'll definitely send out a letter of support, maybe to James Moylan. I don't know. Anyways,
maybe what we could do is ask them to provide us with an overview of how our funding has helped them with their mission, so that they're not writing anything to the legislature, they're not engaging in that level of politic. But if they do a one summary based on the funding last year, this is what we were able to accomplish. And we can include that in our package that we send. That way we preserve their integrity against lobbying and politicking. But at the same time, we're able to show how the funding that we have been able to provide organizations has made a difference in our community.
That's good. Anthony, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to say that, you know, so if they're nonprofit corporations, especially if they're 501c corporations, they're absolutely prohibited from lobbying the legislature. So I just wanted to include that. But I think Mr. Leon Guerrero is on the right track when he says, you know, maybe if they just describe what they use the funds for, and we actually include that in a letter, that might not be the same thing. So that might be the workaround, but to actually have them draft a letter to the legislature requesting for funding for anything would likely be a violation of the 501c. Most of their bylaws and their articles of incorporation, which are built around that, prohibit such lobbying. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. Appreciate it. Yes, Yvette.
Very similar to that, I was just going to recommend putting it in our letter, just how the organizations that we've supported and how we support, and maybe even the dollar amount that was used to support them. But also maybe, would you be able to reach out to the Guam Comprehensive Cancer Coalition? Mm-hmm. Maybe a letter from the chairperson from there, as well as the Guam NCD Consortium, because I know they work very closely and they would acknowledge the support.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's a really good idea, Yvette. We'll reach out to the Guam Cancer Coalition. Isn't Kathy, again, the vice president?
I have no idea who the president is.
I think she is, or she might even be assuming president. I'll check with Kathy the next time I talk with her on that.
She got roped into it again, against her will. But anyways, okay, we can talk to her about it and find out. We can at least find out who's the president, but that's a great idea. Thank you, Yvette. Okay, I like that. I like those ideas. We'll get information from the various awardees and include it in the letter, and just to show what the impact is. So, great ideas. Any other ideas or concerns or issues regarding this before we move on?
Thanks for dinner.
You're welcome. Okay, moving on. Open discussion information. Anybody have anything to share or comment on?
Something, an idea that I've been toying with is maybe what we need to do as a as an organization is create our own video story that we can post to our website, post to the university, and put out there in the universe so that, you know, like me, for example, I didn't know this organization existed until Kathy sat down and had a long talk with me about this organization and what they were trying to do, because there are nonprofit organizations out there that have no idea that we exist. And I ran one of them and I didn't know this existed, and we don't know they exist. But I think that if we put something together, like a short 3 to 5 minute overview of what we are, what our mission is, and, you know, start putting it out there, maybe putting a link on our press releases and things like that, so that we have like a 2 minute story that can help spread the word. Because, you know, as soon as I heard about this story, I was all in. You know, and, you know, as you know, I've been in now for almost 2 years now. I think that if we can put together our story and include it in everything, and then when we approach the legislature, having that link on our documentation, combined with the reports we get from the nonprofits, you know, how they've used the funds from the previous grant. See, that's not lobbying. That's reporting to us. What we do with that documentation is up to what we decide to do with it, but it's not the organization's. But we can maybe use that little 3 to 5 minute video just to spread more awareness so that other nonprofits can reach out. Because remember, one of our goals is to build capacity in the community. And it's hard when we don't know who, when we don't know who they are, they don't know who we are. That's why we keep seeing the same names.
Okay. That's a good idea. Yeah, great idea, Ken. We can do that. You know, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say we can talk to Jonas Mekapinlak and see if we can have his office do a project or something like that. I'll talk to Remlin about it.
Maybe we can talk to the media classes and see if they would be interested in taking this on as a project.
Sounds
real
good.
Work as opposed to theoretical work.
Right. This is definitely applied. I was just going to add to that. There was one cycle where we had funded the, it might have been PIP at the time, where we funded the development of books for young children on cancer. I think there were a couple of books that came out of that. And that's definitely a lasting resource that has been shared with the schools. And if you want to follow up with that story, how many books were printed, where it was disseminated, and what schools are doing with those books. And I know it's gone beyond the schools. So like Cedars was also a part of it. So if you want to follow up on that story, I think that might be, it's probably the only publication that the Cancer Trust Fund has ever funded, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, good idea. Thanks, Yvette. Okay. Well, Ken, you just gave Remlin a big project to work on, so.
Well, I think if we approach, the different student groups or the, classes and marketing and stuff like that, I think that they will relish this, because I remember my marketing classes days and, you know, it was all theoretical, you know, create a program for XYZ product, you know, this would be something that maybe we could get the students more excited about it because they'll be able to see the benefit in the community.
Yeah, we can offer to pay them too. So it'd be like a paid project.
Yeah, or do it as a contest with the award getting, you know, first, second, third.
Okay.
Good. Many ways to skin this cat.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Anything else anybody wants to bring up or suggest before we close out?
I just have a question. Is there a write-up on conflict of interest? You know, being a regent and a past regent, that was a very that was a subject we had to be very careful about. I noticed on most of these organizations that we're donating to, I have been involved. Is that a conflict? Do I need to disclose? So is there a write-up on that or something, just at every meeting when we talk about a topic?
On a small island like this, I don't think it would be perceived as a conflict of interest as long as you were not actively engaged with that organization at this time. Because, you know, we're a small island, we have a small population, we've got, you know, and a much smaller population of volunteers like that. But in my experience, and a lot of people have, let's say I have a lot of experience dealing with conflict of interest over the past 10 years. And the at the end of the day, what it boils down to is, what are your active ties? You know, the fact that you may have been involved with, let's say, a Judah Foundation 5 years ago or even a year ago, but you're no longer on the board of a Judah, that does not constitute a conflict of interest. Whereas if you were still on the board of a Judah and here, then that would, and I'm sure Anthony, if he's listening, could probably comment on that too. But my experience has been that as long as the tie has been severed, past is not a disqualifier.
You bring up a really good point, Chris, because we have in the past, I believe, was it a year or 2 years ago, we had a council member who her family actually applied. She was a member. I don't know if she was a member or her husband was a member or her sister was a member of the foundation that applied for funding. And so we told her, well, you can't be part of the decision-making process because you can't grade your family's, and she was kind of a little bit perplexed by that. She didn't really understand. So, and I don't think that we do, I'm looking and I don't think we specifically talk about conflict of interest, except in this new thing, in this new bullet that we've added on code of conduct, strict avoidance of conflict of interest. And so maybe internally, we need to come up with a checklist of what constitutes a conflict of interest. I know for myself personally, last year when, it was the Hemlani Foundation that applied, and I said, oh, I can't be a part of that because I just found out that my brother-in-law worked for them. So I recused myself from that, from participating in that review. So, yeah, I think you bring up a really good point. Anthony, yes, did you want to say something?
Yeah, just to Mr. Leon Guerrero's inquiry, if you were a past member of a board on another nonprofit, that might not constitute a conflict. If you were no longer on the board, it was a few years ago, but where you might start getting into trouble is, hinted by Rachel, is if you have an immediate family member that might be on the board, or you or an immediate family member might benefit. You know, let's say that my a sibling of mine, knock on wood here, was a cancer patient, and I was a board member and they would benefit somehow, I shouldn't make that decision. So that's kind of it. It takes a little more than a few years to you know, end a conflict if you were on that board. Thank you.
I think that's one of the advantages we have as a small community, because we all know pretty much, we're pretty familiar with who's been where, who's done what. And as a group so far, with maybe one possible exception in the not too distant past, we play well together. And whenever we've had areas where there have been the possibility, because I remember, I think Kathy one time, you know, was concerned about something because of her other work, and she disclosed it. And then we made a decision to the effect that we didn't think it was a conflict of interest. But that's why I like it, the way the language is put, because it's a guideline, but it's not a box. You see, if it was a box, then we have to tick off, check, 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 yes, but we're one check away from being a conflict of things. I think that as this board is, this commission is evolving, we're going to get better at this. And this is a case where I think that less administrative is better at this stage, until we find out if it's actually going to become an issue, because we have that paragraph D or F or whatever it is, if it gets too wild and crazy. But I think that this organization, the composition of this, has been maturing and has been working very well together. And we just have to look at the past year. I think we've done some pretty good stuff. We've accomplished a lot of things in a short period of time. And I think part of the reason is because of the personalities involved. And then when you're putting together a commission, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the personalities and the influence. And I think we've got a pretty good range of personalities and influence now. My caution would be, let's see how this evolves and see if we need to prepare a checklist or not. But I think just the general guidelines that you've put together, I think those will hold us in good stead until we find out they won't. Just my two cents.
Okay, anybody else want to comment? Yeah, I know that Anthony and I have been kind of a little bit more cautious. We just we worked on a revised conflict of interest policy for faculty researchers that back in December, and I finally gotten it through the Research Council. So it's something that we just need to be aware of. And anyways, all right. So thank you, everybody. Any more comments or information you want to share before we adjourn? Okay, if not, we'll adjourn at 4:44 p.m. And if you have anything you would like to add for next month's agenda, please let me and or Remlin know, and we'll make sure to get that on there. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Have a great evening. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.